SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Let me turn up my. Here we go. Tina keeps giving me a hard time about not hearing her if I'm in another room. You know, or another part of the house or whatever. But I'm just trying to turn up the my headset volume. I think my hearing these headsets I think is taking a toll. That's maybe that's 2022's ailment is the loss of hearing. the latest development. I don't know. a very good Wednesday morning, and got a busy another busy morning. We still obviously catching up, and I still have got a bunch of races I want to talk about from the last week, 10 days. There is seemingly just a parade of. Whether it's hard news or whether it's the passing of longtime favorites and the people that have made the sports history what it is, that keeps catching the attention and conversations about Billy Turner. Starting on Monday, and then yesterday, Bert Sonnier, and then word came yesterday that Haas came from word circulated from the horse park that Haas had passed, and Haas's story and career, which come up particularly with Breeders' Cup, tales of Breeders' Cup heroics. In particular, one of those horses that, like Slew, I guess, to a different extent, obviously, but one of those horses that people you really have as a, they'll say the same word, touchstone. It's funny. There's any number of at times you go online and you go to websites and Haas is a, and versions of Haas with a number or, different plays on Haas. And that gives you, that gives you an indication of how popular he is. And of course, there's one particular Haas that's out there on the message board world that is particularly high profile that we have in mind. But there's plenty of them, and email addresses. People send emails, and they've got Haas in there. In their email address. How many people are saying thinking yep. Not necessarily Haas, but other horses, that are their favorite, or horses that they campaigned. There's plenty of those, obviously, as well. So, Haas, one of the ones that I think for people of a certain age, if you came to the game, in the mid late 90s, you had potential to have Haas be, one of the horses that captured your your interest and your heart. And while everybody focuses on the comeback, the 2 years removed in the mile, the second mile win, his career was terrific. And you know, you go back and you realize when you look at the, you know, the complete picture, you know, 12 wins, 5 seconds, and 2/3 in 20 career starts between 94 and 98. Michael Dickinson, even under these circumstances, always a treat to check in with Michael. And it's funny, you know, had gone to Arizona in December expecting to see Michael because he very frequently has had, you know, one of the trade show booths at Symposium. Didn't have it this year, so didn't get a chance to see him. And I mean, anybody and everybody that would consider a synthetic course, I mean, Tapita is, I don't want to say last man standing. I mean, to some degree, it's certainly true, you know, for North American racetracks and surfaces. But it's also proven out to be the best and the most durable, and also given Michael's and his wife's, is fastidious the right? I think that's a fair. I think it's fair to call Michael fastidious, given how seriously he takes everything, their service and their maintenance and you know, the after care portion of Tapita. Michael is, you know, proven out that if you choose Tapita, you're going to get the service you need as the materials, you know, age and wear. So we will, as part of the conversation with Michael, get a catch up, you know, on the ever evolving surface. There's no debate. I think everybody pretty much has acknowledged at this point the statistics. There's enough of a base of information regarding, you know, the safety and the numbers involved. So we'll catch up with Michael Dickinson and have him discuss De Haas's career and the amazing return. Lots of I didn't actually see the video of the 98 mile, but there were plenty of people quoting Durkin yesterday. With lots of references to Lazarus. One thing, you know, one thing that I hadn't really remembered until you look, it's one of the fun things about, like, when we had that conversation with Richie on Monday and Andy yesterday. I mean, I've said it a million times. Nobody remembers race days like Andy. Day after, you know, race after race, and you know, some of the obscurities, particularly on big race days. You know, who broke their maiden, you know, on this Belmont day or any other. But one of the things you realize, and I'll ask Dickinson about this. De Haas ran, he ran for everybody. One with Johnny, one with Carlos Marquez, Gary Stevens. Is that, can't tell which Alvarado that is. Cornelio Velasquez rode him to a third in the poker. Corey Nakatani a third in the Hollywood Derby. Rene Douglas won the Del Mar Derby with him. McCarron a second in the swaps before he pretty much, you know, there. I think people forget too, and we'll let Michael talk about this. I mean, the fact that, you know, he started on the dirt with Kevin Eikelberry, and Michael went on with him, but, you know, recognized fairly early that, you know, his long-term future might be on turf. Julie Crone won the Jersey Derby with him. Luz won the best turn on the Aqueduct Inner in 95, his first start at three. And then was a fairly distant second in the Gotham to Talking Man. He ran for anybody. Looking forward to letting Michael just, we'll let Michael just kind of free associate. You don't typically need to ask too many questions of Michael Dickinson. He'll take the bit and he'll go on with it without a doubt. So we'll talk to Michael after Dick Powell joins us. We'll talk to Dick here in a few minutes, and we'll catch up on a variety of topics and, of course, HKJC action to look forward to and discuss with Dick. He'll catch us up on everything. I think we might have a few other topics as well to do with Dick. Happy Valley is up to, let's see, do we have, we will have time, I think, to get, we'll get, there is a race, actually, the 8th is coming up fairly shortly, let's see, the 8th is going to post. I had it on the screen earlier. It's always the same. When I first start working in the morning and putting shows together on race days, Hong Kong, I'll have it on, and then it goes in the background. So I just pulled it back up. The Cleveland Handicap is going to post. And 6-5 favorite for Marrero and Cruz. You're My Everything is 6-5 with a minute to post. So we'll handicap that 9th race with Dick, and we'll let him take us up to that one. All right. Sid, as promised, you know, yesterday, I hope for those of you that are doing the, you know, the previous day broadcast into the live, if you listen to the hour and 15 minutes or so with Alan Foreman and Chuck and Sid, thank the three of them again for the time yesterday. And, you know, this is one of the things I'll let Dick, see what Dick's thoughts are too. There's no roadmap here, per se. We're going to have to let the HISA board. And I did go back. I did want to go back. I pulled out a lot of last year's notes and various pieces to reacquaint with the makeup of that board, and you know, 'cause it came up yesterday. And of course, Charles Sheeler is a former federal prosecutor. He's in charge. Governor Beshear, Steve Beshear, is on that board, as is the former National League president, Len Coleman. Ellen McClain, who you know, helped Naira through the period of the franchise renewal, and she was kind of a surprise when she became president, because she really kind of came from the finance side, but it ended up actually being a blueprint, because Dave O'Rourke from that same path. But Ellen McLean, the chief legal officer of the Tennessee Titans, Adolfo Birch, and he's in charge of the medication control committee. Joe DeFrancis, who everyone knows. Susan Stover, and of course, comes out of an equine, you know, equine veterinarian background. She's chairing the Racetrack Safety Committee. Bill Thomason from Keeneland, and D.G. Van Cleef. So those were the principals involved when, and you look at that list. I mean, that's a it's a heady collection, frankly. So we'll see where things go. But I thank Sid and Chuck and Alan for, you know, three. I wanted the three different disciplines, essentially. I mean, Alan as a litigator, regulator, administrator type, and Chuck as a horseman, and Sid as a, you know, bloodstock advisor and journalist as well, with strong legal interests and chops. So, and we'll get Dick's take too. So, and we do have to talk. Speaking of veterinarian backgrounds, we got to get to the CHRB story, the very strange, I think, at this point, best described as odd circumstances involving Dr. Blay. We'll get to that in a second. Seth Merrill, hour three today. I'm sure Seth has got Gulfstream and Tampa in his crosshairs. Gus has looked at Gulfstream and Tampa, and I posted the Gulfstream. He's got the Gulfstream picks up, and he'll have the Tampa to follow. So they're up at the website. They will be. Gulfstream's already up, and he's got to finish Tampa, but we'll get some of that in, and we'll start to look ahead to opening day tomorrow at Sam Houston. And Nick Tamerill and Frank Hopp from Sam Houston Race Park. As the excitement builds, this may be not that Nick hasn't already called a bunch of races, but it's there's a lot of reason to be excited for Nick. And as he described at the time, this sort of, you know, he had done some race calls, and, you know, had sort of dabbled, but, you know, for this to become, you know, a full time gig, it's pretty. It's kind of crazy the way it all kind of came together, and we'll have, not that we don't get a steady diet of Nick anyway, but we're going to get Nick and Trey Stiles. They'll come in with plenty of Sam Houston action as the season gets rolling. Regarding the story in California, and it's going to have to get a little bit more detail. Reached out to a few people to see if anybody wants to opine on what has transpired here over the last, what is it, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. And as we were wrapping up the season in December, the story emerged that Dr. Blay and in addition to Dr. Blay, there also were accusations against Dr. Baker and Dr. Sarah Gray Bill Jones of, rather mundane variety of, we'll call them accusations. And this took a second, second level of involvement yesterday with the state medical board, the veterinary medical board, temporarily suspending Blay's license, in essence, to, or out of, you know, abundance of caution. We really like to hear more specifics about the motivation to keep him from involvement in the investigation around Medina Spirit. This whole sequence of events is odd. We've got a couple of people who are intimately familiar with the way things in this area work in California. And so, well, we're going to get a little bit more background from them. Because when Dr. Blay took over for Dr. Arthur, who was retiring, he's widely respected and hailed as a reasonable and in fact ideal successor to Rick Arthur. So this sure feels like there's subterfuge and intrigue behind the scenes, and whether it's people trying to muddy the waters in general and cast a negative light on, you know, on the administration of the sport in California, that could very well be the motivation here. Knowing how virulent the anti racing interests are out there. So this is an unusual series of events. So we'll get more, and of course I imagine that this is more a Matt Hegarty when it comes to California on this particular story, whether Steve Anderson and Jay and or Matt Hegarty. It's more of a hard news story. So we'll have further detail. All right. So. Turn to Dick. Let's get Dick in here, Case, and we'll get started with Dick Powell's visit, and a couple of other retirements that came forward yesterday. And of course, we had mentioned the Ron Bauer news out of Monday afternoon, see how that one plays out for the Fradkins, and the news yesterday that the Gamin officially retired. No announced breeding plans yet by Michael Lund Peterson, and there was a hard hitting 8-year-old, actually now I think 9. Monty Mann retiring, and he'd be 9 now. Finished his career with a win for the Ivory Sisters Racing Group, and they were. I saw some notes. We should really reach out to that group. And they had a lot to celebrate. 18-time winner, almost $800,000 in earnings for Monty Man. The custom for Carlos. And he was, you know, he was actually, he was expensive for a lawbred at the start of custom for Carlos's, as he was getting started as a stallion. And he really, what a nice career. And it's always great. It's particularly fun when, you know, when a horse gets to go off the stage as a winner. You know, started his career on the East Coast, and then ultimately and appropriately got to Louisiana and was able to start, you know, taking advantage of, you know, not that he wasn't building a, you know, if he'd stayed in a different part of the country, he certainly wouldn't have, I don't think, blossomed into what he became. But once he got to Louisiana and was able to start taking conditions, you know, to his advantage, allowances and stakes, and he, you know, pretty much marauded from that point on. That started in with the claim. It was claimed in New York. It was claimed at in October of 2017, and got about 6 weeks. Ron Fauché and company. And then just started to win and win regularly. Delta, Fairgrounds, Evangeline, Louisiana Downs, all the various, you know, the Louisiana Cups and the, you know, the Legends and all the various stakes days that the Lawbreds get to enjoy. I'm just going to count them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 state bred stake wins for Monty Man. Nice. Congratulations to everybody. I've also got to mention, because we do it every year, and I have to probably reach out to Rob Rosette and Tino Diodoro. The winningest horse of 2021, Shinny, the Square Eddie, and this was another claim, and a very modest claim, that went on a tremendous tear that started at Turf Paradise and continued on through the year at Canterbury, and then back to Turf Paradise to end the year. 10 straight for Shinny. Nice story. And a total of 12 wins on the year for this four-year-old, now five. So we always celebrate the winningest horse of the year. And I haven't, somehow, we've gotten to Wednesday of the week and haven't had a chance to mention the unbelievable seventh win for Just Might. Unbelievable what kind of a year Just Might had, as well as change of command for Michelle Lovell. And they won the Richie Shearer over, that was on the 26th, I think. And 11 stake wins for Michelle Lovell between the two horses. 7 for Just Might, 4 for change of command, including 2 graded stake wins. And just an unbelievable, as we called it, the summer of Lovell. Then it became the autumn of Lovell. And now the winter of Lovell. Just a great year. I look forward to seeing Michelle down at Fairgrounds. Looking forward and welcoming and saying Happy New Year. I think I wished Dick and company a Merry Christmas, but not Happy New Year yet. Dick, happy, healthy.
Thank you, Steve. Same right back at you.
I appreciate
it. As I said last year, what could go wrong? That was my mantra for 2021. So,
well, you could say that
kinda
in a minute.
Gotta work on a new one for this year.
Yeah, what could go wrong? How about, I don't want to say everything, but yeah, that's a loaded, it's a loaded question.
We're here.
Yeah, it's true. Good point. Good point. Dick, we can launch into some Hong Kong. We'd have a little bit of time before that next race, so actually, I'll start on the hard news with you instead, and. I don't know if you had a chance yesterday to listen to the what I termed a post-USATA HISA roundtable yesterday. I'm glad. What do you make of what transpired over the holidays and where things go from here?
Well, having been in Arizona and seeing the three committees make their presentations firsthand and answer questions from the audience and things like that. And clearly they were not ready. They clearly stated a deal had not been finalized with USADA, which, you know, at that late stage, you really have to wonder. And just so not a shock to me, because I didn't have the expectations that this was going to go forward. I think the big lie has been, as you and I have talked, they've tried to sell this as independent, and it's not. It's Jockey Club. And if the Jockey Club would have had the testosterone to step forward in the beginning and say, listen, we're going to get this off and running, and then we'll step back, or do something like that. Instead, they just acted like they were going to hide in the shadows, and USADA and HISA were going to somehow form together and create this great organization, and just failed miserably. I mean, like you said, drove the ship into the iceberg. That was tremendous, and it's absolutely true. So the whole thing about, well, certain questions can be readily answered by, well, yeah, but if you didn't believe the big lie, then some of this stuff makes sense. So how do you proceed? I mean, there's a real con artist element to this. How do you proceed and take Travis Tigard and pop him out of a box and have him speak at the roundtable and before Congress and everything else, and he's going to run this, and he's done this in the past, and you don't have his organization locked up. I mean, I can tell you, if I was Paul Tonko or Andy Barr, I would not be happy today, because I would feel like I've been used. That they said one thing and they didn't have it set up the way they said they were going to do it. To have an issue in the bottom of the ninth, when it should have been resolved when you were filling out the lineup cards. It's just amazing. And as I always like to do, and doesn't make many friends for me, but too bad, would you run your business like this? I mean, you know, you guys in the Jockey Club, all these titans of industry. Well, let me see how many industry titans you guys would be if you ran all your businesses like this.
Fair points on all fronts, and I was asking from early on, the question, and Alan, Alan reiterated this repeatedly. A lot of the questions could have been answered, or at least you could have kept everybody on board on the same page, had the dollars and cents been addressed. And I get the sense, frankly, Dick, that maybe that, you know, that wasn't, they weren't ready for that because they didn't necessarily expect the program to, you know, to be successfully included in that omnibus bill. And, you know, that basically the thing went through, and not to say that everybody was flat-footed, but you get the sense maybe that they didn't necessarily expect that this would happen as rapidly as it did. So now the two questions are, first of all, the legal challenge that is going forward and is going to, at some point, you know, sooner than later, it would appear, reach the courts. And at the same time, on a parallel track, that board that I just read through has got to be prepared for July 1 and, you know, at least have, you know, a management framework in place to do the things that the statute calls for. So we'll watch and everybody, I think, would prefer that this work, that, you know, something that everybody's asked for decades and decades, you know, a league office and a buck stops here management system. So, all right. Rubber meet road.
Yeah. I try to keep expectations tampered down so that I don't get too excited when the bottom falls out. So I didn't have expectations on this. I think it was just done so poorly. And I'll never forget, it must have been 2018 maybe. We're at the Albany Law Conference in Saratoga. And Paul Tonko was a speaker as the title sponsor to the bill. And he took some questions, and Rick Violet raised his hand and had some questions about why weren't horsemen involved in the development of this bill. And it took him by surprise because all he knew was what he was told. And he was not told that the horsemen had not been involved in the development of the bill. So he was kind of taken back. And it was like from right then and there, you could see, we have a problem. We have this top-down approach, not a collaborative type effort where some of these things could have been fixed day one. Or if you're going to have a line in the sand on some issue, at least you would have known about it day one. So they just went ahead and went their merry way and had their dopey little meet. I shouldn't say dopey little meet, but I do consider the Jockey Club Roundtable a dopey little meeting. So I'll excuse you.
You'll stand by that.
Well, just look at the history. Get these kids in Arizona and give them assignment. Go over the last 10 years of Jockey Club Roundtables and what their announcements were and what their initiatives were, and then come back and tell me how many of them worked.
Well, I always do give, I always, whenever this comes up, I always do credit. If we're going to go back, maybe 10 years, maybe it was 11 years, but the initiative out of the McKinsey study that called for an increase of television exposure, that has been, and that deserves unending credit. When the Jockey Club tour on Fox,
yeah,
that has grown into what we see on Fox now, and that came from them, and that absolutely deserves acknowledgement.
But they actually had to pay someone
That's all
to
right.
give them the most obvious advice ever.
Well, you know, sometimes you do that. You go to advisors to reinforce your own, what you hope was your own opinion. There's also been plenty of ideas that, that have been good ones that have not, you know, that have not come forward or not been implemented, I mean, one thing that they just consistently seem oblivious to is the gambling. I mean, it's like they're, you know, you would think after 50 years going back to 70, they wouldn't be embarrassed that gambling is a part of our industry. And yet it's constantly on the, either an afterthought or back burner.
Well, it wasn't mentioned once by the three committees that reported at the Arizona Symposium. And believe me, I had my ears up waiting. And not even the normal dismissive type recognition. We got better. Yeah, we're going to look out for them. I enjoyed what you guys did yesterday because it was a bunch of different voices that were saying different things, but collectively were on the right page, saying the right thing.
That's courtesy of, you know, three people, as I said at the end, summarizing things. That's courtesy of three people who have devoted their lives and their careers to the sport and to the industry, in three very distinct different areas. Sid as a bloodstock advisor consultant, and Alan as, you know, probably the preeminent, along with Ben Lieben, but Alan has been, you know, I think, has had his hands in more pies, and his leadership and his work, and Chuck as a lifelong horseman. So I thought if we're going to put together a panel, that is about as representative as you're going to get.
Yeah, and I know it's very good, and your passion and iceberg metaphor. It's great.
You like that one.
I was driving in the car when you said that.
That's it. I don't want to be a danger. I don't want to make people spit coffee out on the windshield or anything. So. I'll avoid that going forward. Dick, we got 5 minutes to help people put a play together. Let's look at this ninth race at Happy Valley before you catch us up on the last 2 weeks of action at Hong Kong. What do we think here?
Okay, we're going two turns, 1,800 meters, long run to the first finish line, and then around the very tight, quirky Happy Valley turf course. The favorite here, I think, is number three, Savvy Kingman. Let me go back and check. I timed out on my computer. But the horse I like here, and I like it to place. Now, you know, gee, they're really going out on a limb here. Place betting goes down three places. So you don't have to finish second to win a place bet. There's 12 horses in the race. I just got to finish in the top three. And Flying Turbo, number four, has a lot of things that I like. Number one, unbelievable pedigree. Deep impact at a Miss Finland. Miss Finland won the Golden Slipper. She then went on to win the Victorian Oaks. So she won the biggest two-year-old race at 6 furlongs and then won a three-year-old classic at a mile and, 2,500 meters. This is a gelding. We've seen Galileo geldings. Now we got a Deep Impact gelding. Flying Turbo had some good form in Australia, came to Hong Kong on December 12th, raced at Sha Tin, kind of battled for the lead, first over, had the lead turning from home, weakened, only beaten 4.25, comes back in against the same group level, so they keep his rating at 72. Draws well. Harry Bentley's been riding very, very well. He only has 9 wins, 13 seconds, 18 thirds. So Harry's doing the job. Doug White's had a couple of winners tonight. Doug's having a good season. I just think pedigree, pace, I think a big improvement second time out in Hong Kong. I think he's a threat. He's now 30-1 in the win pool, 6.5-1 in the place pool. So we're just going to bet him to place 6.5, $13 horse to place. And obviously the horse to beat is Champion Dragon. He's 3-1. He's by Star Spangled Banner. Number 3, Savvy Kingman, is by Kingman. And number 5, Wealthy Delight, is by Lord Canaloa, who not only won 2 consecutive runnings of the Longines Sprint, but has gone on to be a super sire in Japan, siring, among others, Almanai. So Lord Canaloa has a gelding in here, the Royal Gelding, but they all have some pretty nice pedigrees. Kingman, Deep Impact, Lord Canaloa, Star Spangled Banner, Shocking, who once won a Melbourne Cup for me at 10-1. We're going to go Flying Turbo number 4 to place.
And I'm looking at form to win. And as it happens, using 1,600 to 1,800 meters, Flying Turbo happens to be the choice. And in terms of average, on their best, you know, Champion Dragon, if he runs that, you know, that best race again, that makes sense. But there's a couple of other prices in here too, Dick. Looking at form to win, Tanchi Monster with Marrero, 11-1. That's the one horse, and Vinci the 7, who's a huge price. But Tanchi Monster leaving from the 8,
wearing the 1. Yeah, he carries the high weight. He's in at 133, so. He's the high weight in this class 3, so he gets the freight train put on him. But he gets Joe Marrero, and he certainly can get the distance. He'll be grinding along, and it's a tough race because we don't see this many competitive 1800 meter races. We get the stake races at that distance. Sometimes we get the 1650, which starts right by the finish line. But this is a nice run to the finish line the first time, so they can kind of sort themselves out. We've seen Speed do okay tonight. Kirpany went wide to wire. A couple had the lead into the deep stretch and weakened late. But I just think Flying Turbo will be up near the lead. Hopefully Bentley can get him to relax. He was a little keyed up his last race when they make that long run down the backstretch at shot 10. I don't think he ever really relaxed. I think going 2 turns will hopefully help him relax. And if he has any kind of punch in the stretch, maybe we can get up for third.
All right. I just quickly put together my intricate audio system. which making Casey laugh. You've seen the intricate audio system up close, I'm going to take Flying Turbo and box up with Tanchi Monster and the favorite. So 1-2-1-2-4 box for me. And let me put that in. All right. And of course, there we go. 1-2-4. Boom. All right. We're live. We're in action. No light yet. It's been very chalky today, Dick. I had it on early, and you had a 4 or 5, I think a 5-1 winner early, but then since then it's been nothing but the top choices.
Yeah, for Happy Valley, couple of favorites, couple of second choices, a lot of single digit odds type winners tonight. So they hadn't raced. They haven't been to Happy Valley in a couple of weeks because they ran that all weather card last Wednesday. And then when they ran that card Friday night, our time, that had enormous betting. I mean, the total betting that night was 1.82 billion Hong Kong. I mean, that's way more than Longines Champions Night. I mean, that does about 1.7 billion. And the two stake races weren't that strong in terms of field size, but they had so many races with 14 horses. They just had spectacular betting that night. So.
Well, it's all whenever you have those all weather nights, it's Paul Matisse. It's all Matisse money that's contributing to that handle. That's because that's his favorite. He goes to town on the. that's his favorite because it was Paul who clued us in that when Marrero was at his absolute peak, when he was winning everything, you know, four or five years ago. Paul said when you have the all-weather card, they overbet Marrero, and that's when you get overlays on, you know, on other horses. And so that was one of our early clues about Hong Kong insights.
Yeah.
Not to say that he's not capable on the all weather, but he would not win, you know. Then he wasn't winning with the alacrity that he was winning on, on the turf courses.
And also, he's always been better at Sha Tin than Happy Valley. Zach Purton always dominated Happy Valley. Zach's supposed to be back maybe January 12th.
Oh, good. So he'll
ride Barrier Trials this weekend, and if he's okay, he'll be back.
All right, we're getting ready here to load. We're pretty well loaded.
Last one coming forward.
Here we go.
Tony Speechley on the platform. Ready. 300 meters, and they're off and racing. Romantic Combo is a little bit slow away from Barrier 12 and looks to be going back. Fast Pace, one of the first away, but out wide of the Anomalies, charging forward. And World Famous, he likes to go forward. He's up handy also. Savvy Kingman's not able to lead, but he's up in the first four, followed by Wealthy Delight, Sank on Sank, and then came Flying Turbo, two lengths to Champion Dragon at the winning post. And he's just throwing the head up into the air. Vinci on the rail, followed by Tianchi Monster, Gift of Lifeline, and four lengths away to the last one, who was Romantic Combo. 13.22 as they run past the 1,200 metres, and in the second section, ticked over in 22.58, so genuine pace, and it is the Anomaly in front, showing the way by a length on World Famous, and Fast Pace handed up for a trail third. Fourth is Savvy Kingman, a length and a half away, Sank on Sank, followed by Wealthy Delight. Vinci's midfield on the rail from Flying Turbo. Two lengths to Champion Dragon, who's still got the head skywards and won't really relax and drop it. Tianchi Monster back on the inside. Gift of Lifeline, a Romantic Combo, just been shoved along last. Inside the 700 metres. It is in front, the Anomaly, showing out by three quarters, World Famous. Two lengths away, third, as Fast Pace as they run off the back straight. Savvy Kingman pushed up, Sank on Sank going okay on the rail. Wealthy Delight called upon, going nowhere in a hurry. Vinci under a ride. Tianchi Monster getting into the clear. Champion Dragon, the favourite, is no good thing from a long way back. He's got a lot to find on the Anomaly, approaching the 250, who leads the way. Fast Pace, World Famous, Sank on Sank up the inside. Savvy Kingman, Tianchi Monster out wider. It's Sank on Sank in front from Tianchi Monster, who's trying to challenge, but he travelled oh so well on the turn. And Sank on Sank has beaten Tianchi Monster and Savvy Kingman. Fourth, maybe Romantic Combo. He's whizzed up the rail to a run into about fourth position, maybe. He wasn't too far away with the Anomaly and also Fast Pace. They were followed there by behind those runners as they've run on through. We had Vinci, who was at the head of the rest. Wealthy Delight was under pressure a fair way from home, never really went on. World Famous, Flying Turbo. Gift of Lifeline down the outside.
Dick, now I'm a little sorry I didn't I didn't just bet Tianchi Monster each way. Ends up second. 30-1 winner here. The 9, Cinq-en-Cinq. Jerry Chow.
Jerry's staying out of the penalty box. He gets suspended a lot, but he's on track tonight. Cinq-en-Cinq, what is that? That means 55?
Cinq-en-Cinq, I think that's right. Yeah, look at you. Yeah.
Hadn't,
30-1.
Hadn't done anything this year. He's had 10 starts this year. Holy mackerel.
There was not. I'm just looking at. I'm looking at various. No, trying to figure out a way that you find this horse. This
he's dropping down. He's come down from 78, 76, 74, 72, 68, 66. So as he's dropping down, he's shedding weight. Gets in with 119 minus the 3 apprentice allowance. So he's in with 116. So. Yeah, that's one thing. He saved ground.
He was giving,
and the race really fell apart. That second quarter after they run that first eighth of a mile to get to the timing pole, that was very quick, and you could see Turning for Home. They were just scattered everywhere. There was no usual race flow because of the pace was melting down. So Jerry just had him in perfect position, and the kid can ride. I'm telling you, the kid can ride. I just hope he can just mature enough to avoid the self-inflicted wounds he's had. You know, putting himself in positions where he gets set down for as much as he does, but he had quite a lot of room there to come up the inside.
Well, and. Can't complain about Tianchi Monster's try. And actually, you mentioned that weight. 17-pound spread. Tianchi Monster with Marrero, 133. And you mentioned the 119 minus 3, so 116. Yeah, unbelievable. 17-pound spread, 9-1-3-8. You got a 30-1 shot over a 12-1 over 9-2. And Fast Pace, who actually ran well, ended up fourth, 10-1. So this is going to be your biggest mutual, obviously, of the evening and of the morning. So
yes,
fun.
And that's handicap racing, you know. That's
yep.
That's the beauty of handicap racing. And then when you're throwing in a 3-pound apprentice allowance, and it widens even more. Yeah, then the 9-horse suddenly, you know, has a shot, and then the trip was obviously perfect. He didn't get floated wide like many of the others did. So,
all right. Well, when we see final numbers, we'll give them to everybody. Got to wind down though, Dick, because I got Michael Dickinson lined up, and Sid is going to join us again for Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. But looking ahead to Saturday.
We're on Saturday night, early Sunday morning. No stake races. Kind of a 10-race turf card, which will then set up in a couple of weeks on January 23rd. We have the Centenary Sprint Cup Group 1, the Stewart's Cup Group 1. That's at 1,600 meters, and that will get Golden 60. And he is going to use that race as a probable prep for a trip to Japan in February. So off of that stellar win in the Longines Mile in December, he's being brought back for the Stewart's Cup, Group 1 going a mile, and then go on to Japan from there. One thing this year, Steve, and we already ran the January Cup tonight in race 4. That one to Zabrowski, Joe Marrera, and Casper Found. So that was at a mile in April, so the same distance as this race. So we already had a Group 3 tonight, but none on Saturday night, Sunday morning, but all on the turf this week. And like I said, Zach Marrera should be back a week from today at Happy Valley. trainer's race is wide open. I can't remember seeing this many trainers this early in the season having double-digit winners, 10, 12, 15 already. Frankie Law is 34, so Frankie's killing it because tonight was only the 34th meeting of the season. So having won a meet is quite an accomplishment for him. And, yeah, we get back into kind of the normal schedule. There was a little changes. And then there was a makeup card in there on the 29th that filled in for one of the cancellations. So now we kind of get back into the normal Wednesday weekend Happy Valley Shot 10 schedule.
Well, and of course, I'm just trying to look ahead to the end of the month when we're in Vegas and... we'll have left. New Year, you're going to have the big Chinese New Year card, which I guess will be, technically, the Wednesday, it's on the calendar, it's February 1st, Dick. So how are they going to celebrate at Shot 10 on the weekend or at Happy Valley on Wednesday?
Good question.
Right?
Rummaging through things here. Chinese New Year is February 3rd, Shot 10.
Okay, so they're going to do it that way. All right.
Year of the Tiger.
Yes. Yes. Those of us that grew up as baseball fans in the previous half century, 1968 will always be the Year of the Tiger.
Or golf fans.
Well, that's a different kind of tiger. one of my favorite things about going to Vegas for NHC is the city is festooned. I mean, everywhere, particularly at Wynn, it seems not just at Wynn, also they all deck out for Chinese New Year. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, rightfully so. Well, say hello to Michael Dickinson, and I'm glad I came on before Michael because nobody can follow Michael.
I said to Sid, Michael asked, "Can I come on at 10? I said, "Sure," and I had to let Sid know. I said, "Sid, Michael Dickinson needs 10 o'clock." I said, "So I can't tell you exactly when we're going to pull up, but Michael's going to join us after this break." Dick Powell, everybody, HKJC Racing, of course, on Twitter, HKJC. Action resumes on Saturday night late and into Sunday morning. We'll talk to Dick next Wednesday. Dick, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve. Be good.
We'll take a break. Come back, Michael Dickinson, to celebrate the life and career of Da Haas, a favorite of many, many, many players. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2000.